Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. I'm calling to you live this week from Baytown, Texas, just on the east side of Houston, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And I've got with me my co-host and friend, Rhonda Del Baccio, the Story Lady from ProfitableStorytelling.com. Welcome, Rhonda.
Hey, I am so glad to be here, as always, and calling in from beautiful but hot Lampy, Missouri.
Nice. And what's going on over there in Missouri today?
Well, the chickens are providing, as always, really excellent entertainment. And in fact, I think they should be featured in a book because I do. My chickens actually teach life and business lessons, Gina. I don't know if you really knew that, but
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they help people to understand things like how to feed your hungry market, and they help me to teach business lessons and life lessons, and so I think there will be an upcoming book featuring those chickens, but I just got in hand, and I'm going to send you one. I just got in my hands the print copy of the Instant VIP, Insider Secrets.
Woo-hoo!
Fill with us an expert author. Woo!
Yay! Oh, that's awesome. How do they look?
Oh, my gosh. The image on the cover, it is so incredibly perfect. I mean, when I saw the cover image, I went, the biggest benefit of being an author is having that instant VIP status, and I needed an image that would convey that, obviously without words, because the title will do that. And I saw this great image. There's this red carpet leading up to the back seat of a limousine, and these lights coming from above, and it's just perfect, and the cover looks so incredibly cool. Jason Oman, who's, of course, number one best-selling author of Conversations with Millionaires, he just about lost it. He loves that cover so much, thought it looked great.
Neat. I can't wait to see it.
Yep. So it is extremely cool, and, of course, I have a foreword in there by you and Elsom Eldridge, who's author of The Obvious Expert.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait. That's going to be fun. And when are you planning on launching this?
Haven't set that all up yet, but I will sometime in this fall we'll be doing that. And just really, really excited to have that book in hand. There is no feeling quite like knowing that you've created something that's truly going to help people and getting it into your hands and holding on to it. It's just not the same as an electronic ebook or PDF. It just doesn't feel the same at all.
I can imagine. I cannot wait to get my first book in print.
Well, me either. I can't wait to help you.
last part of this year, fourth quarter, that's on the agenda.
Yes. And a very exciting thing that will be to have your own book. And I often joke that it took me longer to come up with the full title of the book than it did to write it. It's always a matter of testing and figuring out what people are going to respond to and what best conveys the benefit that you are sharing in your book. It is kind of sexy and attention-grabbing.
Wow. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, today we are going to talk about life changers. And this will be a chance for you to share more in depth on the experience that you recently had with being able to manifest your new home, and also to share things like some of the books and some things that have really truly shaped your life, so that what we can do then is by sharing those to help our listeners look into their own lives for the things that have shaped who they are. And they can be anything. I've got a couple of things in mind to share myself, certainly some books, but some experiences that were pivotal, and various types of things. So I think this will be a really good chance to share that and really give some guidance to our listeners.
Wow, that sounds great. And I actually got into my new RV last night, slept in it last night and everything.
Wow.
Yeah, it is definitely a step up from the one that I had before. Not that the one I had before was like anything to slouch at, but it is very much a step up. It's a little over $1 million sticker price.
Wow.
But it is a big, beautiful bus. It's actually bigger than the one that I had before, by about 3 feet, 3 feet longer, and it has 4 slide-outs instead of 3 slide-outs. Very similar layout to what I had before, which the layout worked really well for us before, so I'm very happy that the layout is almost identical. But
that's good.
It's the kind that has, it's got a TV that flips down from the ceiling, 50-inch TV up in the front. It has marble.
High.
50 inch, it's huge. It's almost the size of the windshield. It's that huge. It flips down from the ceiling.
Oh.
Marble floors, Corian countertops, brass faucets, and built-in soap dispensers and stuff like that. The wood is what my husband calls a burl wood. It's like that shiny wood that has this wood insert that's like an inlay that's gorgeous. What else can I tell you about
it? They have in limousines.
It really is.
Isn't it that burl wood? Isn't that what they have in limos? It's that
exactly.
It's very high gloss, and it's just like butter. I mean, when you touch it, it just has this feeling
precisely.
Of elegance.
Precisely. And it's like a burgundy-ish colored with cream-colored carpeting. The recliner chairs are like an off-white color, off-white marble. So has a full-size refrigerator. In my other one, I had a side-by-side refrigerator, but it was like 11 cubic feet in a normal house, but 21 to 23 cubic feet. So it looked nice, but it was very small. We now have a 22 cubic foot refrigerator with a side-by-side freezer and ice and water on the door and everything.
Wow.
Yeah. So Bill is spending his day moving while you and I are chatting. Lucky him. I tell them, let me know when I have to move, but otherwise I'm not helping. He has from now till Friday. He doesn't have to move any furniture, so he can handle it.
Right. Well, yeah, it's not exactly as if you have to lift couches and pianos and dressers and all those kinds of things. It's a little bit different.
Exactly. Exactly. So tell me about some of your favorite books that have made the biggest impact in your life.
One of the very first books that made a huge impact on me is Jonathan Livingston's Seagull.
Oh, me too.
Really, that's by Richard Bach, and I'll tell you, I was a kid, and I don't remember exactly how old, but I'm 7-ish, I'm thinking, and my mother took me to the library, and they had the book in large print. Of course, since I'm mostly blind, that was, at the time, the only way that I could read. I didn't have any kind of glasses yet for reading. And we didn't know about talking books, even if they would have had it, I don't know.
Well, I don't think they had talking books back then, Rhonda.
Yeah, I don't know that they did, but they had, in the library in large print, she basically had this, I don't know why it had touched her in some way, she made me read the entire thing in one sitting, which I loved the book, but I've got to tell you, I had a lot of eye strain by the end of it. But the thing that really stands out for me is I could definitely identify with Jonathan Livingston Seagull. for somebody that maybe has not read the book, the main character, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, is a seagull who just doesn't fit in with the rest of the flock. He doesn't care about just scrapping for food. He wants to fly. He wants to do something great, and just sheerly for the joy of flying. And he just can't make himself be like the rest of the breakfast flock, as he calls them. And I could definitely relate to that, because that's you know, kind of the same story that I have. I was just never interested in the same kinds of things that other kids were interested in. I was very different and very much set apart because of that.
Well, I remember Jonathan Livingston Seagull, but the week after I read it, I also read Richard Bach's other book called Illusions. And I think it was Illusions that made the biggest impact on me. It's about how life is merely a series of illusions, and the real message in it is your perception is your reality, and if you don't like your reality, change your perception. And it is really a very straightforward message. His book just so resonated with me, every one of them, including Bridge Across Forever. I remember reading Bridge Across Forever as a teenager, thinking to myself, that's exactly how I want my relationships to be when I'm older and I want to get married. And even when I first started dating my husband many years later, probably 14, 15 years later, I can remember thinking on my first date, wow, it's just like Bridge Across Forever.
It's so funny that you say that, Gina, because I love all of his books. Illusions made a big impact on me, and Bridge Across Forever, I'm still looking for mine, but I'm really expecting that type of experience, and I refuse to settle.
I agree so much with that, Rhonda. I settled in my first marriage. This is my second. And the whole time I was settling in the first marriage, it was a few years after I had read Bridge Across Forever. I was really young. I got married at 18. And I kept going, oh, but I wanted Bridge Across Forever, and I'm not getting that. Why am I saying okay anyway? And it didn't make any sense, but did it anyway, and boy, what a mistake it turned out to be. So you don't have to settle. You really can have that fairy tale romance and a true soulmate if you choose not to settle.
Well, and you have to choose
Your life will never be the same when you find it.
Right. I'm looking forward to it. Don't have it yet. But I was it's another funny thing is I was dating a man when I was 18, 19, and I loved him and loved him in many ways. And, you know, he's a great person. I still think fondly of him. But he was just not the Bridge Across Forever person. There was a part of him that I always felt couldn't quite accept me completely as I am. He liked a lot of things about me, but anything about that was kind of on the, psychic or intuitive or whatever, he just had no room in him for that. And, you know, you don't change people, but that's such a fundamental aspect of me that I knew if I ever tried to shove that and ignore it or not speak to him about it or, you know, whatever, just go on and do my own thing, that it would feel like a big secret and the thing between us, and he wasn't my Bridge Across Forever, and I broke up.
Wow, that's really amazing. Not everyone has the courage or the insight to do that.
No, and I mean, we dated for, I'd say a year and a half or something. We dated for quite a while. He really wanted me to marry him, and I just kind of kept saying, well, it's a little young for that, a little early for that. I wanted to get to know him better, and I just had this feeling. I said, I just can't have this big, you know, elephant in the room kind of thing between us that's so fundamental to who I am. So, yeah, I did. I mean, I literally, and he's still someone I think well of. I don't have any, you know, rare feelings about him at all. It was just a realization, and that I was okay with that, and hopefully he's just having a, you know, fantastic life and has found his perfect match. Like Bridge Across Forever.
I would hope so. And it's funny that we're talking about this today because last night, for the first time in many, many, many years, I actually talked to my very first boyfriend. We were steadies from the time I was a second in my sophomore year all the way through graduation from high school. We were pre-engaged. He was a year ahead of me. We were pre-engaged and very much had plans to get married by the time we got out of college. And life had other plans for me, and I didn't get accepted to the college that we had planned on going to together. So he went off to college, and I went out and got a job. So we ended up going our separate ways because of that. I'm sure had we gone to college together that we very much would have gotten married, that I never would have found Bill because of that. And he now lives in Austin, Texas. He's a software engineer for IBM. And I am going to see him on Friday for the first time in like 30 years.
Oh, wow, how fun.
Yeah. But that relationship was very much like Bridge Across Forever, too. In fact, I was dating him at the time I read the book. But it's, you know, life has other plans for people sometime. And I certainly can't say that it worked out badly. I would not want to redo any part of my life, even the part of getting married to the wrong man at such a young age. Because it led me to the place that I'm at today with the knowledge that I have today.
Right.
And if I went back to change any part of it, I may not end up at that same place. So change has a lot of consequences. As
it really does.
In any of Richard Bach's books.
And living with no regrets, what was really interesting is that I was in a meeting one time, and somebody was doing some muscle testing, which is a way to test in your body. For those who may not know, it's how you can use your own body to test the truth and accuracy of various things, and like whether something is good for you or whatever. And this person was doing something showing the power of your memories and your thoughts, how thoughts affect you. And he said to me, I wanted to think of a time when you have that you regret. And I couldn't think of anything. And he pushes down on my arm, expecting me to just fold. And my arm stays strong. And he goes, were you thinking of something you regret? I said, I can't think of anything I regret. I honestly can't. And he tested again, like, oh, I don't believe that. And it was like, no, well, you know, my system is telling you. I have no regrets and I have no shame. So it was an interesting way of, I said, I guess I kind of blew your demonstration. I can think of time I might have been embarrassed or upset, but, you know, not the shame and regret. It's just not there.
Well, it's an amazing way to live, isn't it, to not have any regrets?
Yeah, it's very freeing. And I know people say, oh, they regret this and they regret that. I'm like, well, why? There really is a lesson. There's something cool in there for you. There's you know, it's like the story about the girl who's given what looks like a pile of poop, and she's digging through it going, with all this, there must be a pony somewhere. And it's the same type of thing, is even if something wasn't fun, wasn't pleasant, and we've all had plenty of those experiences, it wasn't great going through it, but yet there is a hidden gift inside of it, and there's no reason to have regrets or shame.
I so agree with that. So what did you like about the book, Illusions?
This whole thing about, excuse me, the power of your perception. And see, I started studying the powers of the mind back, it was when I was a kid, and I had a bout with pneumonia that was, although it wasn't considered a severe case, there was one night where I was just alone in my bedroom, and it was a very tough night, and I know that I, you know, stopped breathing and died and all those kinds of things. And, you know, and just as a part of that, I thought at the time that it was caused from this cough medicine that I was having a reaction to. And started me studying the powers of the mind and natural remedies and so forth. And so in reading Illusions, now I didn't find out about that one until I was in college, and I have bought and given away several copies of that book, because I would buy it, I would read it, I would meet somebody who it seemed like that was the perfect thing, and I would just give it to them.
Wow.
Richard Bach is one of those people on my list of people I would truly love to meet. And for one thing, just to be able to thank him personally for how several of his books have really shaped and touched my life, and just because he's got to be one of the most interesting people on the planet, in my estimation. So,
you know, he's on my list of people to meet, too.
Well, if one of us ever gets the chance, we'll have to invite the other to come along, right?
Well, why don't we try and find a way to get him on the show?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And same reasons, to thank him for the impact he's had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I read Jonathan Livingston Seagull when I was in the summer between 6th and 7th grade. I was at Notre Dame at the time, University of Notre Dame, at a summer camp called Catholic Association of Student Councils. It was a 6-week summer camp to teach young people leadership skills and how to run a student council. And I remember reading that about the 4th or 5th week of the 6-week program. And shortly thereafter, they had this competition where they would choose a certain number of leaders from the 6-week program who would go on to become what they called senators, who would have the opportunity to travel around the country the whole next year teaching educators about leadership and how to run student governments.
Uh-huh.
And that, I got chosen as a senator. And it was really because of Jonathan Livingston Seagull that I even decided to run. The next summer when I was out as a senator was when I had Jesse Jackson in one of my classes, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, when I taught him leadership. So
right.
Richard Bach really started that whole interest of mine in doing things involving leadership and student government. And the next year spurred my interest in running for public office and so many things in my life I would never have done had I not found Richard Bach in his books.
Hmm. That's just remarkable. It's fun that we both have the same author, too, who's really at the root of so much of it.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't read any of Richard Bach's books, go just Google his name. You will find dozens of them.
I'll put some of his books in the show notes. I didn't put any in there because I wanted to see what we both ended up talking about and pick kind of the three, because we can only put in three, so I thought I'd pick the three tops that we have, and it's hilarious. It's like, oh, we have the same books. That's really wild.
It is very wild. Okay, so let's talk about another book. What's another favorite book of yours?
Well, actually, and I know this is a common one for a lot of people, but it really did shape my thinking quite a bit, was when I first read Think and Grow Rich. And it's one of the things that I got from that particular book. And it's funny, I think I took something he said in a different way, but I still applied it when he talked about having, you know, basically a mastermind group of people. Well, I didn't have people that were that way, but I would imagine in my mind I had my own cluster of people who were from history, inventors, and great thinkers and great people, and Richard Bach was one of my that I, you know, mentally connected to, and Galileo, and people like that who were kind of in my, when you need to tap into some, you know, really cool, powerful minds, these are the people to connect with. So I had my group of people, and sometimes a new one would come in or someone would go out or whatever, but it is a very interesting thing that I got from that, in really being able to not just tap into the power of other people, but even doing it within your own mind and awakening to what's already inside of you and really being able to look within.
That's a really interesting thing that you just said.
It's not really exactly in the book that way either.
So how is it in the book?
Well, and I do need to go. I'd like to go back and read that. With several books like these that are really impactful, I read them, you know, occasionally through the years. I read J.L. Seagull and Illusions about every year, and now I think I'll read Bridge Across Forever. I hadn't thought about that one in a while, but But anyway, he's talking more about the mastermind with people in the same room with you, or that you're talking to who are living people.
And I
took it to the, well, if there aren't living people around, you know, then there are great people throughout history. And because of other reading and having already interest in spiritual and metaphysical and religious faiths from all over the world and all those things, is I just thought, well, we'll just tap into them. They're all there. They're all available to me. Anything's available to me. So why not just do it that way?
Well, that's, again, very insightful of you to know that you could do that. So many times we read a book and we think we have to apply what the message is very literally. And it doesn't always work that way.
No.
I think not often enough do people really read books, especially nonfiction books, and look at how they can apply the message of their book to their own lives.
Right.
So many of the books out there, and nonfiction included, I'm sorry, fiction included, not just nonfiction, so many of these books are books that really have a message that you can apply. It can totally change your entire life and transform it in front of your eyes.
Right.
It's just a matter of doing the second part. Don't just read, but apply.
That's the biggest thing, is that many people don't do it, because otherwise if you just read it, it becomes shelf improvement. And it's really by thinking and applying it to your life that it can become self-development.
I agree.
And stories, fiction stories, are that way. One of the things that I love to do a whole bunch, it's on my absolute top, along with teaching people, is writing transformational stories. So pretty much any time I write a fiction story, even if it's really short, there is going to be what's on the page and what's between the lines and what's even deeper than that. So that even if it's a kind of a light, funny story, there are still layers of messages in that, and I absolutely find that is just excites me to be able to write stories. And I just wrote one this weekend that is going to be part of somebody's book launch, which is extremely cool.
Nice.
But in any case, the point is that you're making is really applying it to your lives. In the course of study I'm taking with dreamschool.org and studying dreams, that's part of their methodology. Their very basic course, which allows you to read a dream that somebody had submitted, and then there are what images are in the dream, and then there's an interpretation of it that one of the experts from the school has done. And part of that section is applying this dream to your life. This is a dream somebody else had in the night. It's not one of your own dreams, but that there can still be applications. Part of it because of the universal nature of the messages in dreams, and that there is always an application. And they encourage you, of course, you also include your own interpretation as part of the, think on it, write what interpretation you have, and then the next day read what the teacher has written and see how it compares. But that applying it to your life is a big deal.
Yes. It really is, and I can't encourage people enough to really find books that have messages that you can benefit from. My husband has only read one book in his entire life from the start to the end. Never, ever has he actually sat down and just read a book because he wanted to. He never wants to. His mom did him a very big disservice when he was growing up, and every time he'd have to write a book report, she'd read the book, she'd write the book report, and he'd turn it in. So he was able to pass his classes now without any trouble. But I would want to have seen more application of what he was learning in books. But it starts with finding a book to read. And the only one he's read is a Dean Koontz book, and that's it. And he only read that because I was really harping on him to read something. So if you're struggling with any problem at all, there is a book out there to fix it. It's just a matter of finding it.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the authors who are really connected, and it's not, you know, it's not that it's so rare. Lots of authors and fiction authors, the best of them, the ones who you really like and those books that you think about, really go and think about those messages. It doesn't matter if the book is fantasy, science fiction, or a realistic story or historical story or whatever. There's something to be learned from it. And, you know, the same type of thing from reading biographies or historical books that are based on real events. And I won't say this isn't in the category of the most impactful books in my life, but I recently read 1776, which was a best-selling book, and it is about, obviously, that year and that time in our history. And I never had the depth of realization of just how tough it was for the people and how it, oftentimes it seemed to be just a freakish good fortune or something totally unexpected that turned the tides when it, everything looked as if it was going to be, there is just no way we can turn this thing around. And all of a sudden there would be fog one day, and that allowed people to get by and make things happen. And just things that just were so off the wall and seemingly impossible if you were only using the power of logic and what would appear to be likely based on the facts at hand, there would be no way. And the faith that people like George Washington had, and that just that resilience of, it doesn't look good, but we're just continuing to move forward. And things like that, you'll get those messages from reading the lives of real people who've lived throughout history.
What was I going to say? With the books that you prefer to read that really help you grow, how do you find them, and what tells you in advance that this is going to be a book that you're going to learn from?
I assume that I'm going to learn from every book.
Ah.
So I don't have a, am I going to, sure, do I pick books sometimes because of a certain thing? Well, yeah, I mean, of course. But a lot of times the books I read because a friend recommended it or whatever, I just know in advance there's a message inside of those pages for me, probably more than one. And the more the book sticks with me, the more I know those messages are getting to me on all kinds of different levels. Even if it's, well, it sounded interesting when I read the cover, or I heard about it on the morning, whatever, some TV show or from a friend. I just have that assumption. And I imagine, don't you do that as well, Gina?
Yes, I do.
Right. So you just know automatically when you, whatever book it is, that there is a message in there for you.
Yep. And usually I pick the books because something about the cover on them tells me that there's a message. It might be someone who's got a testimonial or a foreword whose name I recognize, and I say to myself, oh, well, that guy's stuff's always been really helpful to me. I want to read something that he likes. It might be because something about the book is a topic that I feel like I want more of an understanding around. I wish I read more today than like I used to. Back when I was sick, I was a voracious reader. I would read 2 and 3 books a week, every week. And by the time we started going out on the road in January of 2005, since then, I don't think I've read more than 5 or 6 books altogether, maybe a couple books a year, that's it. I don't make the time to read as much as I used to, and I really miss it. I used to have a book by my bed at all times, and if it was a good book, I'd get in bed by 10 at night, and by 3 a.m. I'm still reading. I have all these itty-bitty book bites that I could use to read when I was laying in bed. And today, by the time I go to get in bed, it's, let's turn the TV on, let's watch some program while I fall asleep, and I'm asleep in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you need to make the time for in your life if you really want the books to help you grow.
Right. I read, and oftentimes it may only be 10 or 15 minutes, but I have something I'm reading. And it's funny that you choose books by their cover. Of course, since I get most of my books on audio, And if they're coming from the library, I probably haven't even seen the cover. So, it's not as much in my consciousness, but that is the first way that most people select whether to pick up a book has to do with the images as well as the words, but primarily the images and colors on the cover.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of tells you that there's something in there or the image captures your attention, so then you assume there is something for you in it, because the image captures your attention.
Well, and just thinking about it, in the last 5.5 years, I'll bet every single book I've read, with the exception of one, it came originally from a referral from someone else. Someone
right.
told me I had to read this book, so now I'm reading it. And I think the only book that doesn't hold true for is one of my favorites, which is Jack Canfield's The Key to Living the Law of Attraction. What an amazing book. Oh, my goodness. It's not just a book that you would read. It's a book that you would interact with.
Mm-hmm.
So it reads differently because of it. You have 2 to 4 pages worth of reading. Then you have like 8 to 10 pages worth of workbook-style exercises. Then another bunch of pages to read, then another workbook-style exercise. That type of a book is so valuable because you're applying what you're learning instantly from each and every chapter. And by the time you get done with the book, you have to actually sit back and go, holy cow, I cannot believe I just accomplished all of that in such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely something to look for in a book. My little sister's just coming in from next door, so sorry if you bark.
Okay.
I'm on my radio show. Have you read The Key to Living the Law of Attraction?
You know what, I have not, and I've been having trouble finding it in audio format, so I'll have to check with Amazon. I've just looked on Audible since you had mentioned that, and our Library for the Blind, my one beef with the Library of Congress, and I'm so grateful, I'm so, so very, very grateful for the Talking Book Program because so many books are there, but they just apparently don't think that we want more than the very pop culture self-development or business books. There's like hardly any business books. I mean, you'll find Think and Grow Rich, but, there's just not really all that much else than that.
Well, I will confess, even if I can't find a book in an audio version, what I usually do is I buy a downloadable version of it, and I just pop it into something called PDF Converter 6, and I let it read for me, and that works out just as well as buying the audiobook.
Right, and I very well may do that, see if it's downloadable. But, there's just so many books to read. It's just remarkable, and I love reading, and the things I explore and discover and the way that people express themselves is always of great interest to me. So, of course, it's the writer in me. I really came to this whole game because of my love of the power of the written word and how it can change people's lives.
Yes, absolutely. Let me see if there's a URL on the book. I think there is, actually. HCIbooks.com. It's published by Health Communications, Inc., which is HCIbooks.com. But I'm pretty sure that it is available in a downloadable format. And if nothing else, that would allow you to then use a tool to have it read it to you. I could have sworn it's somewhere in here. It's part of the dreambigcollection.com and is available through dreambigcollection.com. And
sure, that is a nice
key to living the law of attraction.
Yeah, and that big dream collection has a journal and various other tools to go along with that. It looks like a crash.
And there's also a Teen Dream Big Collection and a Kids Dream Big Collection. Wow, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And they say you can also go to AskJackCanfield.com and get Jack to answer questions about the book. We should see if we can do that and have him on the show.
I will absolutely do that. It's I've been having a good time. I'm kind of chuckling because I remember I would ask somebody a question through their support desk, and I said, by the way, we'd love to have you on a radio show, and I sent them the same info that I send everyone that to ask if they'll be our guest, and it was just so funny. I was like, oh, well, that sounds kind of fun. Yeah, let's do it. So, but, yeah, that would be, oh, I'd love to have Jack Canfield on the show and Richard Bach, and there's just awesome, awesome people that would be.
And, you know, one of the other favorites that I have, we would be remiss if we did not mention, is put out by Neil Donald Walsh, and that's Conversations with God.
God, uh-huh.
Oh, amazing, man, an amazing book. Have you read that one?
Oh, of course, yes. I've read a couple of them, and they are really amazing. It's an amazing series, and I love that whole concept of what you and if you and God had a conversation, what might come up, and just getting to the issues that people have. The movie is also very good about that.
It is based on that. And, you know, most of the time when I read a book and then I see the movie, I'm almost always disappointed. The book is always so much better than the movie. And the Conversations with God movie is one of the few that I actually went, you know, they did a good job. And it almost never do I feel that way after seeing a movie that's been based on a book.
There is one book that's had a huge impact on me that I actually like the movie better because I saw the movie first, as it happened. Somebody told me about this movie, and then later on I went and read the book, and I thought, wow. And the author apparently wrote the screenplay, and that is The Celestine Prophecy.
Ah.
And that is, there are just some amazing, amazing things in there. For somebody who is not very awakened to the, if you'll say, the unseen or the intangibles as much, this book will help you. And I was certainly very well aware of all of that. But even for someone who's a little bit more advanced in your understanding or a lot more advanced, there are still some phenomenal concepts in there. So, Gina, if you haven't seen and read that, I'm sure you would enjoy it. But it's a great movie, and the movie is actually better than the book, which I almost never say. You're lucky to get it as good as and hardly ever better.
Well, I've not seen the movie, but I have read the book, so you're making me want to put that on my list of things to see.
You'll be glad that you did, because there are concepts in the book that I went, oh, you know, he brought that out so much better in the movie. I wish he had done a better job in the book, and maybe that was, he thought that too, maybe. I mean, I don't know, but I'm assuming so, since it was the author that wrote the screenplay. So.
Yeah. For years, I was very into Stephen King, and I bet, no, for about 15 years, I literally read every single Stephen King book that came out. I had a standing order at Barnes & Noble that the minute it came out, they'd pick up the phone and call me, even get pre-release. And so many of his movies, he then writes the screenplay for the movie, too. But almost every Stephen King book that was ever turned into a movie, after a while, I just stopped going to see the movies because they were so bad compared to the book.
Yeah.
There was so much more in the book, the visualization that you would have of what it should look like would be nothing like what the movie would look like. And that just ruined the whole book for me.
Right. I can understand that. And, you know, part of that is, and of course for those who are not an author of fiction, you wouldn't necessarily realize it to this extent, is that part of the thing that happens with especially thicker novels, because of the transition from the written word to the cinematic picture, even though they say a picture is worth 1,000 words, it can still be very difficult to capture the all the interwoven plots and the various subplots and characters and so forth that happen in a novel into a screenplay without the movie being 4 and 5 hours long.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's part of the issue that comes up with novels. Now, I'm sure with the Stephen King stuff, there was a point that I just felt like he just totally went commercial. And he did have, I used to like his short stories very well because he had, at that point in his time, some interesting messages in his short stories.
I definitely agree with that, too. We have very similar styles, very similar tastes when it comes to reading, don't we?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because we haven't talked about this in before. Goodness knows we hardly ever have a chance to talk, period. And so you know, it's kind of fun to catch up a little bit as well as to share why these books or why these things touch our lives. And also then, of course, thinking toward guiding the reader, the listeners. All of these things can have a huge impact on everything in your life and business, not only just that you're reading something and learning it, but in the way that you relate to other people, in the way that you understand yourself. When you understand yourself in a deeper level, you come across as more calm and centered and in touch, and that is attractive to other people because they usually are very scattered and frazzled and want a piece of centered.
Yeah, that's very, very true as well. One of the other books that I love, and there's a theme here in many of the books that I like, The Key to Living the Law of Attraction is one of them. Another is The Ultimate Gift. I like books that give you actions to take so that
yes.
you don't have to be left guessing at the end. Oh, what should I do to apply this? And both The Ultimate Gift and The Key to Living the Law of Attraction, and even to some extent Conversations with God, it really makes it crystal clear what you should do to apply what you just learned.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with The Ultimate Gift?
That was turned into a movie that was on Hallmark.
It was.
Right. It was a fabulous, and I haven't read the book, but what a fabulous movie. I think I watched it 4 times within a couple of weeks.
Well,
I loved
I've
it
also
so much.
Read the book as well, and boy, tough call as to which one I prefer. I like them both equally well. They were
right.
both awesome. The Ultimate Gift is about a grandfather who didn't come from old money. He had made money in the oil industry, and because of his money, his entire family had gotten very, very spoiled. And oh man, they reminded me a lot of the people on Dallas. Remember that old show, Dallas?
Well, I never watched it,
kind of
but I know of it, yeah. It was very snobby with money. They reminded me of this one branch of my family where my uncle, like the grandfather in the story, my uncle had made a lot of money, and his kids would sit around at Christmas Eve dinner talking about all their stuff and all the great big stuff, big Lamborghini that was new and this big, you know, $3,000 something they bought the kids, and it was almost like a who's got better stuff, and it just, I would go and talk to other people. I didn't like that.
Exactly, and it was a family just like that, and when the grandfather died, he gave everybody different parts of his estate, but he really wanted to do something special for his favorite grandson. He left a series of 12 gifts. And the gifts were meant to help him learn a lesson, the lesson of friendship, the lesson of work, and the value behind work, the value of money. And each one of these gifts, he had to go and do something. It starts out the very first gift. He goes to this ranch in Texas and lives with one of the guys who had made money with his grandfather. And he's got to dig holes for a post, for a fence.
Uh-huh.
Well, day after day, he's going out, digging these holes and digging these holes.
He's mad about it. He is not thrilled.
He ever. And every day, he's got this chip on his shoulder. Why the heck am I digging these damn holes? Or these holes? And finally, he realizes what he's supposed to learn. And the minute he does, the guy whisks him away to the airport, says, send him on to get his next gift. And he's like, huh? I just did all of that for nothing? And I ruined the punchline of the movie, so I'm not going to relate all of the stories, but each one goes from that point. And the kids
right.
just confused. Why do I have to do all this stuff? Why don't I just get money like everybody else? And by the end, when he finally realizes what his grandfather has done, he is so grateful for it. And it is based on a true story. But as part of the movie and the book, they have created this kit that allows people to leave the ultimate gift for their loved ones.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Lifetime, yeah. And it's an amazing kit that walks you through exactly how to do that for yourself.
Oh, my gosh. How cool is that?
I would so love to give Bill the ultimate gift and give him the 12 gifts that they've got in it. He would so benefit from it.
Yeah. That's very cool. That story, as I was watching it, I don't know if you're familiar much with mythology, but the Trials of Hercules, who...
Yeah.
It's basically, I went down and was like, oh, that's like based on the Trials of Hercules. It was very similar lessons in many situations. I mean, slightly, obviously different applications, but, you know, the same type of ideas is teaching you how to be a decent human being and to value everything about life and people and love and not take any of it for granted and not feel like you had all kinds of power that you didn't have. And, you know, it's just amazing. So, yeah, that is an... I hadn't even realized that was a book. That's what I get for not being able to read credits, I guess. And I didn't think to go looking online,
well,
apparently. But
and a kit. So if you go to theultimategift.org, you'll find out more about the book and this ultimate gift kit. There's like two or three forms of the kit that allows you to do this during your lifetime instead of when you pass away. And I just, I was really moved by that. If you think about it, how does all of what we're talking about apply to a business? Well, I can tell for sure that the ultimate gift, conversations with God, key to living the law of attraction, they all form the basis for multi-million dollar businesses, every single one of them. And in any business, if you look at the models that are created by so many of these other great books, you'll find one that resonates with you in what you do in your business so that you can use the model to create your own business. A lot of the books I read just because I'm looking at the business model and I want to understand why they made money and how they made money because of the book. And it's not that the book is the thing that makes them the money. It's everything around the book that makes the money. But had they not had the book, they wouldn't have even made a fraction of what they made because the book generates the lead for everything else that they have to sell.
That's definitely true. And there's another book I absolutely have to mention, and the author, one of the authors, has been our guest, which is The Go-Giver by Bob Berg and John David Mann. Yes, I mean, that's a phenomenal book. And he has a new one, which I haven't read yet. It's called Go-Givers, Sell More. Now, I love books that are, you know, really pointedly life lessons that are written as a story, and that is one of them. And there are many like that. The Alchemist is another great one that's written as a story with teachings in it, and certainly The Ultimate Gift is that way as well. So that's a really powerful book, and this is, again, a person who starts off all being for himself and how do I land this whale so I can get what I need for me, that type of thing. And through this series of lessons and this connection with a mentor really changes everything in his life and takes on more of the way that you and I do business of being a go-giver, not a go-getter.
Yeah, big difference between the two. Big difference. And even John Hiratran, who's been on the show, with The Power Pause, that's another really great book.
Yes. Absolutely, and has a lot to tell you. It's because, for one thing, when you think about that, when you think about John Hiratran's book, The Power Pause, you're probably going to be thinking, well, what does that have to do with business? It's just a story, or it's about this way to relax. Well, there is nothing that puts you into the mindset of success better than being able to relax, to ask within, to be, to really to think on your feet and to be open in that way. And when you're in a state of stress, it's like if you've ever searched frantically for your keys and you're just dashing here and dashing there, well, the keys never show up because you're in such a, that you could have passed them 10 times and you wouldn't know because you're all stressed out. And once that you can get into a state of receptivity and lack of stress, everything opens up to you and becomes so much easier.
Absolutely. I like the example of losing your keys because it seems like every 2 days that's something we have to go through over here because Bill forever is losing his keys. I swear I'm going to tie them on a string around his neck.
Not a bad idea.
It really isn't. But you're right when you're talking about, you know, finding the keys because it's exactly what we go through. And everything gets hard the minute he loses the keys. He could
right.
be having the best day on the planet and, you know, really just having a good time, enjoying being with one another. The minute the keys are lost, everything goes right out the window. We start arguing, oh, how could you lose the keys again? You lost them last time, you idiot, you. You know, everything goes right to pot instantly.
Right. And any time when you need an answer, it's the same thing. This is why the thinking of lack and poverty thinking gets, it's so pervasive. If you let it, it's just, it insinuates itself all over into your life and your mindset and everything. When you get stressed about something and you start stewing about what isn't there, what's wrong, what's missing, like the missing keys, like the missing answer to what I should do next or the missing whatever, and there is such a power to asking within and being able to relax. And the power pause, the whole system that he has, which is 3 steps that you can do in 3 minutes, and you'll find that at profitablestorytelling.com/pause, P-A-U-S-E. When you can get into that state, it is so much more connected, easier. If you can manage the next time the keys are lost, just to take a moment, take a breath, connect with each other, and be calm, which is, you know, the challenge. But it's amazing the differences that will come up. And for anyone who is feeling like you need answers, you don't know what to do next, getting stressed and upset is not going to bring the answer. Relaxing will.
Ah, that's a good one. That's a very good one.
That's where the power pause is. It's really about getting yourself into a relaxed and a state where stress isn't even in your consciousness. I won't even say stress-free because that indicates that there is some lurking or there has been, but in a state where that's not a part of your consciousness.
Yeah, and it's just an amazing book for helping you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And really, all of these books that we're talking about, the way that your mind starts working in reading these books is really the way that you want your mind to be working when you start building your business. So reading the books, to me, actually helps me go into a better frame of mind for building my business. I'm looking at things the same way I am in a book when I'm out looking at my business. Uh-huh. And to be able to understand how characters are developed in a book can really help to see the people that you're interacting with and that you're dealing with in a totally new light. You never would have thought to look at them that way before. So there's so many different implications that books have. Other than just, okay, we read a book, it teaches us how to build this aspect of our business, and we go and do it. Even books that aren't going to teach us some aspect of our business will still help us to grow businesses that are more successful in the end.
Yes, and in so many ways in life. And have you read, and I was just reading this again, is The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber.
No, I read it.
That is where he really gives a structure and a sense to strategic business building as opposed to tactical. And
yes,
he talks about about how so many people start into a business because they're a good technician. And he uses the example of somebody who always loved making pies and how she made pies with her aunt and opened the pie shop and then, you know, did all the things that people often do when they're getting into business. So even though that is a small bricks and mortar business that he's using in the example, there are still lots of implications for somebody growing your own business and seeking to do it in a manner that is strategic.
Oh, that's a great point. And which book was that again by Michael Gerber?
It's The E-Myth Revisited. Now, it came out several years ago, but it's one of those that is really quite timeless because the principles behind it, it really doesn't make a difference if you have a pie shop, a flower shop, an online business, a consulting business. There is so much that you can gain. And when I was first starting and knew nothing really about business, I came from a background, for those of you who don't know, of being a teacher, being a service provider type of person in human services, helping people get hooked up with community services and those kinds of things. That was the type of work that I did, and counseling training and those kinds of things. So business was new to me, and that book was very helpful to me in realizing the strategic mindset for building your business.
Yes. The strategic mindset is so important. There's everything in your business can be broken down into the strategic side or the tactical side. The tactics, you can outsource all of them, and you'll still be successful. The strategic side, not so much. You don't want to be outsourcing the strategic side. You need to be finding a way to craft the strategy and the model that you're going to use before you go out and hire somebody else to try to do it for you.
Right.
It is so important. And planning strategically how your one main website, namely a blog on an index page, how that's going to allow the flow to happen from someone finding you in a search engine to becoming your best customer. And if you think about the process that you went through in finding a book and reading the book and then where the book took you from the book to something else,
mm-hmm.
you need to duplicate that same type of process within your own business.
Exactly.
That's what it means to be a business strategist. And
right.
any one of these authors that we've mentioned today are really entrepreneurs at heart. That's part of what got them to this to start with, isn't it?
Yeah, that you can tell that when you sort of gain the eyes to see that and the understanding is you realize that was definitely a part of them. And that I did a call with Judith and Jim, who also have been on our show. They wrote The Heart of Marketing and several other books. They're 5-time number one best-selling authors, and with 5 different books. So one of the things they said to me as I was talking to their customers about how to write a book is they said that when we first wrote our book, we just didn't have a plan. We wrote it, and we had to basically trash the whole first draft and kind of start over. We didn't understand about leading people back to your website, and the end of the book was kind of the end. And I was talking about how the end of your book is really the handle on the door opening into a deeper relationship and working with you and taking that next step with you. And they said if we had only known that when we first wrote our first book, we would have been saved all kinds of time, all kinds of trouble. You know, just realizing, she said, we expected people to be calling us after the book or visiting our website. They just expected it to happen. They didn't plant the seeds to say, go here, get this bonus.
Yeah.
Get or this specific, don't just visit. I hate when people say, visit my website. Well, why should I do that? I'm a busy person. Give me one good reason. Okay, claim your free something really valuable. That's a reason. But just visit my website. I have got better things to do and more going on in life than just wandering around the web, you know, visiting websites just for the heck of it. So you have to give people a reason.
Yes, you do. And without it, don't expect them to do much of anything, not even reading your book.
Right. Right. And that's the thing is that a lot of times people only read the first part of a book, and when your strategy is right, you cause them to come in deeper and to do more, because even if they only read the first part of it, they might already have your gift or be involved with you because of a call to action that you gave them in there.
I forget what I was going to say. Never mind. It's not going to come up right.
Okay. It'll come back to you any moment now.
I'm sure it will.
I was talking
there
to somebody.
There are so many books that I would love to talk about, but my goodness, we could be here forever.
I know. See, that's the thing, and that's why I thought, even if we did this show again in 6 months' time and we say, okay, but this time we're going to talk about different books that we didn't mention before, we could still go on easily.
What's your favorite business book?
Yes.
What is your favorite business
book? My favorite business book. Well, I guess I'm still looking for my ultimate favorite. There are some that I've gotten some really good, important things from. One of which is the E-Myth Revisited that I've mentioned. Another of which I actually learned the concept, certainly before the book came out, but was Think Two Products Ahead by Dr. Ben Mack. And that, again, the whole strategic aspect. So that's a very good one. I don't know that I have one overarching absolute yet. So what is yours?
Let's see. Some of my favorite business books. Oh, one of my very favorites is also Think Two Products Ahead. That was brilliant. But
yes.
Then also The Blue Ocean Strategy. That just opened my eyes to so many things that I never thought of in that way. I can't say that the concepts were new.
Right.
I just never thought of them in that way. The book lays out a step-by-step system for how to go into a market that's oversaturated, that has so much competition, that people are competing on price, that because of that is even causing the prices of products to go down, not up.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of doing that, it talks about using or creating what they call a, a blue ocean strategy for yourself by taking a value-added proposition and bringing it into a product so that it creates a whole new market that didn't exist already.
Mm-hmm.
And they give a number of examples, and that's the part that I liked the most about the book was all of these examples. Cirque du Soleil was a really biggie, where they could have gone into the circus-going market, they could have gone into the theater market, both of them being really bad, oversaturated markets at the time. Instead, they brought the value-added proposition of a theatrical performance into the idea of a circus and created this whole new market for themselves that they still dominate and own exclusively today.
Right.
Great book.
They invented the category in the same way that Paul LaRoche and Brulé invented a whole new category of Native American contemporary music, bringing the value-adding of the traditions of Native America to the more modern sensibilities of the type of music people prefer to listen to and bringing them together. I have not read that one yet. I've certainly heard you talk about it plenty, and it is on my list of, I always have a list of books I want to read, and then on top of those, the new ones that I find out about come in there, so.
I do as well. I always have a list of books I want to read, a list of movies I want to see. And it just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing. It never seems like I make a dent in either one.
Exactly, me either. But what a great problem to have, right?
It certainly is. It makes for a lot less boredom in life, that's for sure.
Yes. Yes,
and, you
absolutely,
know,
without a doubt. But, I mean, this is a great thing. Sorry.
Today, as compared to when you and I were younger, we have so many tools that make it easier to read books than we ever have at any time in history. From being able to get the audiobooks on an iPod to having the Kindle that you can even read a book on your phone with. is just, to me, incredible. Absolutely amazing. Because I never would have thought that we'd have all these tools for reading books when I was growing up. I thought that a book was a book was a book was a book. But not true anymore today.
Yeah, that's really for sure. And it's a beautiful time to live with all of the different technological things that are available. I'm certainly grateful for it because of these recordings and things like the screen reading programs and what first were cassette tapes and now are all these downloadable files and things that will turn print into audio and all these things that make it so much more accessible for everybody to be able to read and conduct business and live your lives. There are many good things about it. And I had an interesting, I won't quite say a go-around, but an interesting mini debate with Dr. Barbara Condren and her husband, who are in a lot of ways kind of anti-technology. And it's because of the way that technology can cause people to distract themselves and become, uncentered and not be able to be still. And I said to them, yes, and you can kill somebody with a table knife, too. So, you know, anything has its up and down sides to it.
Yeah, it sure does, doesn't it? Do we have anyone in the chat room that has questions? I forgot to open that today.
I don't know, love. You know, I didn't. Since I can't read the chat, I don't often think about it.
I was a bad girl and didn't open it, so bear with me, guys. I just thought of it.
One of my subscribers wrote back to me saying that her favorite was The Success Principles by Jack Canfield.
Ooh, I've not read that one.
And I haven't read that one. And I mean, I like Jack Canfield. I was reading some reviews of it, and of course, some people love it, and some people think it's New Age dribble. So, you know, judge for yourself, but it's always interesting to see what people say about anything. But so for that one, she said, and her name's Tara, and she said that Success Principles really helped me to understand that success was something that I could control. It wasn't something that happened to you or didn't. And so she
right.
found that particular book very helpful for that reason.
Yeah.
So
if that's the message of it, I've not read it. That's a very good message.
Yes,
each
it
one
is
of us controls success.
Right.
And the other thing about it is success is something that is very personal. How you define success and how I define success might be two totally different things. The success that each of us should strive for is that which is our personal definition and not that which is the world's definition of what success means.
That exactly what you just said. I was talking to Nathan Brown late last night, and he coordinates joint ventures and various things and consults with people. And he says he's really working at helping people to define success on their terms, not by the terms of the internet marketing industry or the world or the culture.
Yes, absolutely.
That is like his personal mission. That's one of the things that is of core value to him, is helping people to realize. Your definition of success doesn't have to necessarily mean a seven-figure business and driving such and so type of car and drinking $3,000 bottles of champagne. That may be, and there's no judgment if that is, but, you know, that success is about what is meaningful to you in your own life, in your own world. For Nathan, he's somebody who lives without a car and chooses to be as gentle on the earth as possible and lives a lifestyle that many people would just go, I wouldn't even consider living that way. And but yet that is his choice, and his lifestyle from his online business and consulting gives him the freedom to choose that.
Oh, that's a good idea. How do you do that?
For him, it's not about making loads of money, but having time freedom and having lifestyle freedom. And for
yeah.
right now, his priorities is helping a friend who, being with a friend who has terminal cancer and helping to take care of them, be supportive, and he says even to learn from them, and that he's so grateful to have the type of business where he isn't clocking in certain hours and where what he gets done isn't a measure of how many hours are being traded for a certain value, but of the value that he is able to provide and to maintain the type of lifestyle that he wants. And, of course, his definition of success is may not be somebody else's, and that's not the point. It doesn't have to be a consensus agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. I know growing up, I was often fascinated at the definition of success and looking at this whole idea of how success was really defined by each person individually. And I think I first started thinking about it in those terms with Illusions by Richard Bach. I know it didn't talk about success, but the whole idea of your perception is your reality really made me start thinking about success in those terms as well.
Right. Yeah, and again, back to the message that's between the lines that was probably somewhat a part of his consciousness is he's really all about, Richard Bach and his books are all about living life on your terms.
It really is.
And not going with what the flock, the culture, what everybody else thinks, and kind of taking those risks that come from daring to be okay with whatever your choices are. And I remember one of the scenes that's so funny in Illusions is when he has this difference of perception about land and water.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He is standing on top of the water with his mentor, who his mentor is this old pilot guy. It's very funny. And the guy kind of knocks him over, and he gets into the ground, which normally the water is, you know, fluid and the earth is solid, and he's flailing around in the dirt, wanting to get back onto some nice solid water to stand on.
Oh, yes, I forgot about that. You're right.
And that scene, several times I mentioned it, because when we were talking earlier and now again, that scene flashed into my mind, so I thought, oh, I must be really needing to share that. So if that somebody needs that message
that.
In particular. It's so true. It's like he's like, oh, if I just could get back on this nice solid water. And he's going, and I know that's weird, but he's floundering around like he's about to drown in the dirt.
Yeah.
Just like
perception
he would.
Perception is your reality.
Perception is your reality. And I remember how much that struck me the first time going, wow. And people that have said to me, boy, it's a good thing you can't see because you'd realize just how awful things are in the world. I was like, it's not. That's never going to be my reality. It has nothing to do with eyesight.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What you choose to look at and how.
And back when I was so sick and people would, you know, make comments about, oh, I'm so sorry, you're so sick. Yeah, so what's your point? I didn't act sick. I might have looked sick, but I didn't act sick. Sickness to me was a state of mind. I, even on a day that I was having a major surgery, would still be back at work the same day from my hospital bed in a hospital and not at home. But it was how I chose to treat the illness and my perception of it.
Right. Right. And
on a day where my pain is super severe. And if I can look at my pain as a gift, because it means I can still feel pleasure as well, then I can usually get rid of the pain pretty quickly. It's only when I don't concentrate on choosing my perception that the pain becomes overwhelming. And it's that way with pretty much everything else in life as well. Whether it's looking at the sky and the earth and saying, wow, what an amazing place to live, instead of, oh my goodness, look at all the smog, look at all the pollution, look at all the chemicals, this is a horrible place to live.
Right.
They're both the same place. It's just what you chose to see within it.
Definitely.
When you can really shift your perceptions like that, you can live the most amazing life because it's your perception.
Mm-hmm. I think about places where people are supposedly poor by many standards, and often those people can be so very happy because they're living in a state of constant gratitude and really rejoicing in the people around them, in the relationships around them, and not choosing. They don't even see that they're quote-unquote poor. They are living their lifestyle. They are happy and living it on their terms.
And absolutely.
It's a very really interesting thing for people to realize is that you might look from the outside and think, oh, they don't have this, that, and the other thing. They must be just poor, miserable people. And yet they are probably feeling more centered, happier, more fulfilled than many people who are listening to our show, unfortunately. And, of course, it's my intent, and I know yours as well, that each of you listening feel and realize your power and your freedom and your ability to shape your life on your terms.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so important. That's, I think, one of the biggest messages that you and I have for folks, isn't it, Rhonda?
Yeah, it really is. And it's funny because when I talk to prospective guests and they're like, so is this like internet marketing? And I'm like, no, we don't. This isn't just only about, you know, it's not the make money online or internet marketing niche or whatever. It's we're really teaching people lifestyle freedom and growing business through relationships. And it's in some people, it's like, oh, that's very interesting when I talk to the people about what our show is and who we reach. And sometimes they're like, well, that's weird, you know. Like, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I bet you've gotten that plenty too, haven't you?
I have as well. And, you know, this past Friday, my autoresponder company shut my account off. And They shut it off because they said that I'm in the get-rich-quick or work-at-home industry. I don't perceive myself to be in either one of those industries at all. It's not what I do. And talking to a student yesterday, she says, how could they think you're in a get-rich-quick area when it takes 6 months to get anything done?
I don't know. That's true, though. I mean, you know, how could you be get-rich-quick when you're like, okay, and after your third month, you're starting to be, you know, whatever, build this. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, how, that's not exactly quick, right?
No, and quick is push-button overnight profit type of things. You know, that's rich-quick.
And if you read any sales page on my site, there isn't a one that even suggests that it's shorter than that. In fact, they all go to great lengths to make you realize that building a business takes time and work and effort.
Right.
So to see the autoresponder shut me down for that reason just kind of blew me away. And yet even when I tried to appeal it, they said, oh, no, we looked at the site. It's definitely a get-rich-quick area. Okay.
Very. So they're not letting you have it back. Wow.
No, they're not. And I really believe that the real reason is not because of the clause about get rich quick or work at home. I think the true reason that they just don't even realize themselves that they're getting rid of me is they added a new clause a few weeks ago that says anyone doing any affiliate marketing is no longer allowed to use the autoresponder service. And I'm trying to get them to understand that if that's the real intent, to ban anyone doing any kind of affiliate marketing, that they just put themselves out of business. Because anyone with an online presence, whether you're a brick-and-mortar business online or a training company or whatever, every one of them should be doing some sort of affiliate marketing.
And
in
probably
which case,
is.
How could they ever use this service?
Exactly. I mean, why would they if they weren't doing that? And almost anybody, even a bricks and mortar business, you probably sell some things that you personally have not manufactured.
I would think.
I mean, you know, so isn't that just not much different? If I have to ship my flowers from my flower shop in from whatever company and I have to have a contract and agreement with them, how different is that from affiliate marketing?
Well, they claim that people who are doing affiliate marketing have a higher risk of spam and they just can't possibly tolerate that.
That is bizarre.
They literally, if they're going to enforce that, they're going to have to close the whole business because not one of their clients should be just selling their own stuff.
Right.
And that I believe, is the real reason that they shut the account off. Because that's a very new term in their policy. It just came in a couple weeks ago. And I think what they're probably doing is just a routine audit to find those violating the newest terms of the contract. And I think that they just caught me into that. But we heard back on them yesterday, and they're definitely not going to reinstate.
Well, I guess that's going to not make you really want to refer people to them either.
Well, that's what I said. They went and looked, and I referred almost 200 accounts in the last 14 months. So not so hot for the referrals, especially when they don't pay me affiliate commissions for that. They just give me money off of my account.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly that's really funny, too. They're going to pay people for, you know, essentially off their account for referring people. Then they should, they're violating their own policy in a way.
Well, you know, I thought about saying that to them, but I decided I'd probably better bite my tongue.
I know. I'm a little bit of a smart aleck sometimes. But that's what occurs to me. Oh, you're violating your own policy, and so I guess then you ought to shut yourself down, huh?
Same exact thing that I thought. Exact same thing. Now that they've said no, I'm definitely terminated. I think I am going to go back and say the same thing again.
Yeah, why don't you? You're terminated anyway. What are you going to lose that you didn't already lose? So.
Exactly.
It's not like you're going to miss out your chance of being reinstated by smart mouthing, so to speak. So.
Well, and the bad part for me is the Directions University platform was built from scratch to work with this autoresponder and only this autoresponder.
Right.
So it is impossible for me to use another autoresponder with the DU platform.
Right, and without having it redeveloped.
Yeah, that
or
kind of stuff. So the only thing that we can do right now, it still gets the leads added. We've had a couple hundred leads added in the last couple days, and I can clearly see them and get to them, but it's disabled for mailing. So now what we're going to have to do is, until we can get a new platform built, and luckily it had been underway when this started, not for this reason, but just because we wanted a new one. So we'll have to have the leads going into this. Anytime anyone buys or subscribes, it'll go into this autoresponder. And then we'll manually, at the end of each day, have to get those lists downloaded, send them to the new autoresponder company. We decided to go back to eBizAC because they will at least add my leads to my account for me. I can't do it myself, but they will do it for me. So now we've got to get the leads processed into MailChimp, download the lists on MailChimp, send those lists over to eBizAC, and a couple days later they will import them in for us. What a pain in the neck.
Yeah, no kidding. And hopefully you'll be able to just switch the form code at some point, but when it's already coded into the responder, wow. I mean,
it's not quite that simple.
Right, of course
not. The
way
that DU works is based off of WordPress and BuddyPress technology. And BuddyPress controls all of the registration on. So the way that it works, it's not a matter of changing the form code. It's a matter of literally changing BuddyPress completely.
Right.
So who's our guest next week, Linda?
Well, I'm not quite sure exactly who's next week. We're having conversations about that. But the week after, we're having Doug Westmoreland, excuse me. Yes, and I'm very excited about him with the viral videos. The next coming weeks, we have, just great people. Shel Horowitz, who is a co-author along with J. Conrad Levinson, and he has about going
Shel
green.
Shel Horowitz is going to be on this show?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. How could I have not mentioned him as an author today? I have
him
been
consumer.
Reading his stuff for years.
Oh, wow. How fun. Well, you know, Shell has a little story in the Instant VIP, and that about how writing a book has changed his business and his life. And so I'm excited to have him in there. You'll be able to read his story when you get your copy of the book.
I can't wait. Did we not talk about John Milton Fogg at one point?
We didn't. You know, this is what I'm saying is there are so many books I've already thought of, like a dozen more that I could have mentioned and didn't because,
John hasn't been a guest on this show, has he?
John Milton Fogg was here last June or July.
Oh, he was. He was.
He was
okay.
A while back. And he is in the show archives. I don't remember the exact date, but he is in our show archives as
He's another great author, greatest networker in the world. Awesome book.
Yes. Yeah, and that was a book that was he says it was just really came to him as an inspiration, and he wrote it very, very quickly. It just came to him that quickly. So, yes, he's another great one. I mean, there just are so many. I think of all the books that are stories like that, but all those authors, there are many of them that are fantastic, and he's one of them.
Wow. It sounds like we've got some great guests coming up. So we will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another episode of Relationship Marketing 101. Until then, find a favorite book and read it and use it and apply it to your life and see how you can use it in your business as well. Books are amazing, amazing gifts. And if you haven't already written one, think about writing one for yourself too. And Rhonda, when they need help doing that, where should they visit you at?
Well, if they want to go to profitablestorytelling.com/writeabook.htm, they'll get to me, and I look forward to helping you write your book.
Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to having us back next week.
Me too.
Take care.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Join us at Directions University, www.directionsu.com, for passion-powered results.